Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
There's only 12 states that deal with elected commissioners. The rest are appointed. The rate process is handled very differently when you're appointed. There seems to be less of a opportunity for citizens to participate, because I think whenever you have elected positions, you make a point of going out and listening to the voters.
Our relationship with Mexico and Canada, as expressed through NAFTA, this free trade agreement, has been good for us. It's been great for Mexico, great for Canada, and great for us. What I want to hear is personal stories from people and from businesses who have been positively affected by NAFTA.
I realize that some of President Trump's actions and statements have unsettled America's friends. They've unsettled many Americans as well. Just as America is counting on Australia, I believe that Australia and our allies and partners can still count on America.
And joining us to talk about these and other issues are Lawrence Robinson, Executive Director of the Maricopa Community College District Center for Civic Participation. Reminder that KJZZ is licensed to the district. Lawrence, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And also here is John McDonald, owner and partner with the firm Policy AZ. John, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Lauren, let's start off with the Corporation Commission, but specifically what people are saying that there's been so much controversy over the past few years. Maybe, and it's a pretty complicated job as well, maybe these positions should be appointed. What's your take on that?
Well, that seems counterintuitive to me. I think putting the appointment of the entire commission into the hands of one person, a governor, is not actually the way to take politics and corruption out of this. And so I think that what you have to look at is our state and many of these elected positions, including the superintendent of public instruction, were these positions were put into the hands of the voters for a purpose, because in Arizona we believe that citizen democracy is best to fight corruption.
John, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a matter of being careful what you wish for. The California Public Utilities Commission, for example, is appointed by the governor, and just within the last couple of years has been through a number of different scandals, federal investigations still going on. So the idea that by appointing you sort of remove politics from the equation is just simply not the case. It shifts it from one area perhaps to another. But I think as the person that you had in the intro stated, you do have a body, if elected, that is closer to the people. And I think the studies have shown over the years that that tends to, in PUCs around the country, lead to slightly lower rates because they tend to be listening to their constituents a bit more. And I think, as Lawrence said, you know, Arizona is a state that wants that voice. I think that constitutional change would be very difficult to achieve.
What's interesting to me, Lawrence, is that, you know, people worry about overregulation of things, and this is something that would probably never happen. It might take a constitutional change. But for a position like this, it almost feels like there is such a learning curve, even more than at the state legislature, frankly, because these are some pretty complicated issues. I mean, would it be horrible to require that people have a certain semblance of knowledge about this before they run for it? So it's not just that next step on the ladder.
Well, I think that you can look at the entire totem pole of elected officials in Arizona and state that you might need a semblance of knowledge for some of these issues. I mean, look, the time for some good government reforms is here. But specifically with the Corporation Commission, I think that the regulation of railroads can go to the Department of Transportation. You can look at some securities issues going elsewhere. I mean, the Secretary of State's office, and really make this about regulating possible monopolies, and also put in some ethics reforms that are already required of staff members at the corporation. Make those ethics reforms now be required for our elected corporation commissioners as well. I think when you start with just some easy reforms and leave these elections in the hands of voters, then you're going to solve a lot of the problems that we're seeing now.
John, are easy reforms possible?
Easy reforms are never possible.
Easy, right?
But I think there are some common sense things that could be put into place here that most people would agree on. I think the commission is starting to lean in that direction right now because of the last couple of years of wars and fights and battles, and obviously now a more serious legal matter going on. But to achieve those reforms is far easier in rhetoric than it is in practice.
How strange has this been, though, with a commission that up until a few years ago, one of my colleagues here, one of my former colleagues, used to say, you know, no one pays attention to that. It's pretty important that no one pays attention. Now we're paying attention because of disagreements among members, because of someone being forced to leave the commission. This is not the attention they wanted, certainly. But has that in some ways, that high profile, even if it's raised for not a great reason, has that been good for the community to hear more about the Corporation Commission?
Well, the Corporation Commission is the fourth branch of government in Arizona. So I think the bright side of this, if you will, is more people are now aware of what this Corporation Commission does and the fact that its actions really affect Arizonans on a daily basis. So if there is any silver lining here, it is a bit more knowledge being out there in the community about what these five members actually do. And of course, it used to be three members. It has evolved over time, and the era that we are living in of politics being done in 140 characters and that sort of thing has now infiltrated even the esoteric branches of government like the Corporation Commission.
Lawrence, final thoughts on that?
I agree. I mean, from school boards to the superintendent of public instruction position, all the way through any of these elected positions and bodies, I think you've got a community that's now paying attention. And what do we do with that? Do we make reforms and make these positions more transparent, or do we allow business as usual to continue?
So, Lawrence, yesterday, President Trump had a big White House garden event where he announced that the U.S. was pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton was not a real wallflower on this one, didn't seem happy with that decision. What do you make of what he had to say in terms of the fact that Phoenix is an area, certainly the valley with all the heat, is even more affected potentially by climate change? What did you think about what the mayor said?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to give Mayor Stanton some credit. He's taken a lot of these positions that are counter to prevailing wisdom, whether it's in the Rose Garden of the White House or in the governor's office down the street from where he serves. Look, I think that cities are going to be called upon to innovate, not only in terms of preventing climate change and turning the tide there, but also to create economic prosperity, to create all of the new sort of ideas and governmental progress that we're not going to be able to count on from gridlock in Congress and gridlock in the legislatures. And so I think cities are going to play an outsized role. Look at the mayor of Pittsburgh and his response to President Trump. Look at our mayor here in Phoenix. I think that what you're seeing is a shift of leadership and a shift of innovation, and jobs are going to be created in cities. And look, businesses are already looking toward these reforms in climate change to create more jobs. What President Trump did may create some issues with our trade partners in the EU and China. He's already reduced research and innovation dollars that businesses are going to rely upon to enter the 21st century economy. So it's going to be up to mayors to move us forward.
Considering Mayor Stanton, we don't know what his future will be. We'd all be surprised if he didn't run for something else at some point in the future. Is this good for him politically, considering that Donald Trump, a large percentage at least, are not ready to jump on his bandwagon? They may not be as vocal about it as others, but they don't really find... And a lot of people were upset about what he did yesterday.
You know, the mayor made a similar statement when we had individuals in this state and elsewhere piling on against immigrants, not choosing to take Syrian refugees in particular. That example comes to mind. I think that he has a rare ability to tread that line of making controversial statements and going against maybe the majority of some of the conventional wisdom in Arizona, and also to appease a base that's looking for a fight in 2018. And so I think this only strengthens Mayor Stanton's hand.
John?
Well, I think back to the movie The Untouchables, and Sean Connery is uttering his dying words to Kevin Costner, and he says, "What are you prepared to do?" And every time I hear the different theories about how this issue or that issue is going to awaken this, you know, lion, I wait for it to roar. And I'm mixing metaphors here, of course, but I haven't seen it roar yet. So I think that this particular issue of climate change and President Trump's actions are generating an enormous amount of controversy. But at the end of the day, politically, next year, and certainly in 2020, what are you prepared to do? Mm-hmm. Is this going to galvanize the voters out there, the Democratic voters, the moderate Republican voters that we keep waiting to see in Arizona? And we see them in pockets and we see them here and there, but as a driving force, I haven't seen it recently, and I really question whether this issue is going to be the one to do it.
When we finally have that night at Sky Harbor Airport where the overnight low is 100 degrees, do you think that might affect people's thoughts on it?
No, I think we will simply go inside our air-conditioned homes and get back on Twitter.
Well, let me follow up with you and what I asked Lawrence about the future of Greg Stanton. Is it good for him to come out fighting against President Trump and, frankly, a lot of Republicans?
Well, I think any mayor of Phoenix tends to, when thinking about running for higher office, have the impression that people outside of the city of Phoenix know who he or she is and care. So I think Lawrence is correct that this is the type of issue that can start to differentiate Mayor Stanton from other candidates that might be out there. And to the extent that he wants to use it, I think it would be helpful. My question is this enough? Do people really care about climate change enough to change their actions? I certainly do. But I haven't seen it yet in Arizona's political circles, and I'm waiting for that to happen.
And Lawrence, follow up on that.
You know, the weather is something that no matter the political stripe, people talk about with their colleagues, their families. And I think that we're going to get to the point where, yeah, climate change will not break the camel's back here in terms of creating that that new electorate that has had enough. But I think when you put it on top of all of the other issues that President Trump has chosen to come down upon, none of these really help his base. And so I think they're going to be depressed. But these issues do actually bring the left out. I mean, these are visceral issues for the left. And so I think if the left's candidates can't bring them to the polls, perhaps President Trump can. And I think that his decisions to put a finger in the eye of every one of President Obama's decisions and policy proposals might just be the majority, might be enough to combine to bring people out, not only in 2018, but in 2020.
That's Lawrence Robinson. Also here is John McDonald. I'm Steve Goldstein. It's the Friday News Cap on the show here on 91.5. Coming up, we'll talk about the future of Senator Jeff Flake, and we'll also mark the anniversary of the bombing of Arizona Republic reporter Don Bowles. Stay with us. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. This is our Friday News Cap segment. And we'll get back to the conversation with Lawrence Robinson and John McDonald in a few minutes. 41 years ago today, Arizona Republic reporter Don Bowles' car was blown up in the middle of the day in downtown Phoenix. Bowles died 11 days later. A group of reporters came to the Valley in the attempt to finish Bowles' work and show the offenders that journalists wouldn't back down. John Winters, a colleague of Bowles, spoke to us last year and explained the mindset of his killers.
There was a group of people who congregated at the bars along North Central Avenue. After John Adamson, who made the phone calls that lured Bowles to the bombing, I was following him around and I would go into those bars. And not only was he not shunned, but he was championed. He was lionized. People were buying him drinks and, you know, toasting him. Not only weren't offended by the murder, but thought it was cause for celebrity on the part of the murderer.
The impact of Bowles' death is still felt and is being taught to the next generation of journalists. One of those keeping Bowles' story going is Kristen Gilger, Associate Dean of the Walter Cronkite School at ASU. Kristen, in the world of journalism over the past half century or so, how significant was the bombing of Don Bowles?
Pretty significant. I teach a class called Principles in History of Journalism to Cronkite freshmen. I tell them, you cannot leave the Cronkite School until you know about Don Bowles. And that's because it's a very rare event, not in other countries. I mean, it's actually fairly common for journalists to be killed in other countries. What is unusual is an American journalist killed on U.S. soil as a consequence of their job.
So when you talk to students who are unfamiliar, as many freshmen would be, and many people are not from Arizona, how do they react initially when you tell them about the story?
I think they're surprised. I don't think that students, young people who come into this business think of it as a dangerous business, frankly. And for the most part, it isn't. I've never been shot at. For the most part, it's not. And so it's sort of an eye-opening experience for them to learn about cases where journalists really do put their lives on the line. And maybe they've seen that in a movie or two here and there, but it's not something most of them have been aware of.
Well, take us into the classroom a bit then. How do you teach its significance?
It's two things. One is the kind of work that Don Bowles was doing and the significance of the work that he was doing. You know, so he was doing, investigative reporting and reporting that made a number of people in power, particularly in the dog racing business, made them very uncomfortable. And that's a strong lesson about the watchdog nature of journalism and the importance of holding the powerful accountable, which is something that we talk about. The other thing is how just unusual it is for someone to go after a reporter and take a reporter's life in retaliation for their work. And so from that, just in that respect, this is an historical event. And it took place here, frankly. And the result of it is the other thing that makes it significant, which is the Arizona Project. So there were, you know, dozens of reporters who came to Phoenix from all over the country. This project, this Arizona Project, with all these reporters from all over the country coming in and trying to not uncover who murdered Don Bowles, but to finish his work. Their point was, you can't do this. You can't take down a journalist and stop the work. So what we're going to do is make sure the work is finished.
Have you had students come to you about that specifically and say, you know, thank you for, this is going to make me a better journalist knowing about this?
I don't know that I can remember that specifically about Don Bowles. But I have had students who have decided to visit the Clarendon Hotel and see for themselves where it happened. I think that indicates that has had an effect on them. When I talk about Don Bowles, it's part of a larger lecture on investigative reporting. And I've had a number of students who's, you know, you can kind of see the lights go on and they're like, oh, that's what it is that I want to do. And I think Don Bowles is part of that.
That was Kristen Gilger, Associate Dean of the Walter Cronkite School at ASU. Today marks 41 years since the bombing of Arizona Republic reporter Don Bowles' car. And for full disclosure, Kristen is related to our co-host, Lauren Gilger. It's the show on KJZZ 91.5, and it's our Friday newscap. I'm Steve Goldstein with John McDonald of the firm Policy AZ, and Lawrence Robinson, Executive Director of the Maricopa Community College District Center for Civic Participation. Always like to remind you, KJZZ is licensed to the district. John, let's talk about Senator Jeff Flake, who during last fall's campaign was not shy in his criticism of not then President Trump, then candidate Trump. And there's a big Washington Post spread this week wondering if Jeff Flake can survive being opposed to Donald Trump. What are your thoughts on Jeff Flake? Is he underestimated sometimes?
I think he is underestimated in his ability as a candidate. This is a gentleman who has won a public office a number of times. He is the incumbent. He is a very conservative Republican with a stellar conservative record, if that's what you like. You would like Jeff Flake. He was a former director of the Goldwater Institute. So I think the opining of the Washington Post and others about his potential vulnerability makes for interesting reading. But at the end of the day, if it was my money and I had to bet on a horse, I would not hesitate one second to bet on Jeff to survive that primary challenge and go on and win the general.
And Lawrence, we're not in the horse race yet, but he's going to be challenged by Kelly Ward, former state senator, who also challenged John McCain and didn't win. And a lot of people were looking ahead to the general thinking, would Representative Kyrsten Sinema challenge him? Would Representative Ann Kirkpatrick challenge him? At this point, we have Deidre Abood, and I'm not sure if there are going to be other names who get in or not. But Jeff Flake, as a candidate, and as how he has served, do you think going against Donald Trump is going to hurt him? Will it not matter at all?
Well, look, I think that it will certainly hurt him in the primary, and I think that we could see a much stronger opponent appear against him. I mean, there have been rumblings that our state treasurer, who was one of the first major supporters of our president, may be challenging him. And look, there was a poll, I think it was a Triple P poll back in the fall, that had him underwater against a generic Democrat. And you also have to remember that Hillary Clinton almost beat Donald Trump. I mean, I think it was 5 points in the presidential election here. And so I think that the time is ripe for a challenger to appear not only on the left but on the right. I've heard Congresswoman Kyrsten Sinema. She's clearly one of the strongest House Democrats who might challenge a sitting incumbent this year. I think, as our last segment suggested, Mayor Greg Stanton could take on a challenge. I think even Representative Ruben Gallego, who is a veteran and also a strong opponent, a possibility. And so, you know, Jeff Flake didn't beat Richard Carmona by more than a few points almost 6 years ago. And now he has rattled his base. And so I think anything can happen.
Now, that was a presidential election year. And Richard Carmona also didn't seem to have any negatives because people didn't really know him that well. There was some of these horrible ads about, you know, how he had an anger problem or something like that. But the fact that Flake is an incumbent, do you think that, in fact, is he a sort of an odd incumbent where it doesn't really necessarily make him stronger?
Well, he's an incumbent now who has a record. And you have to look at the amount of people here who are receiving government health care and his sort of murky support of it, which could hurt him both on the left and the right. And you have to also look at the fact that, you know, he doesn't have the name ID of John McCain. He has the of probably a lot of his base. And Kyrsten Sinema has a war chest that's larger than most elected Congress folks. And so I think that Richard Carmona came out of nowhere, particularly did not come from our state, and did not, to be blunt, have the demographic advantages that an Anglo woman representing a swing district with higher name ID might have, let alone one of the other candidates that might appear. And so if I were Jeff Flake, who I think is an admirable senator for taking some of these stances, of course, if I were him, I would be concerned.
And John, let's move on to the other senator from Arizona, John McCain, who came out, said a lot of strong things in Australia and contradicted the president in a lot of ways in terms of trying to calm our allies. Do you think that's a good role for McCain?
I do. I think Senator McCain has been his own person the entire time he's been in Congress or been in the Senate. And I think that since the election of President Trump, who comes with obviously a different set of personal qualities and attributes and styles than we have ever seen, I think this is an era where particularly the United States Senate is going to have to step up and be that check and balance. I don't think the House is going to do it. I think the United States Senate is going to be the body, and people like Senator McCain are going to have to lead that body in saying, yes, the president gets to lead the country, but the people have a lot to say about this. So while I think with a different president in a different era, Senator McCain might have approached that trip to Australia in a bit different manner, I think doing that at this time it was his way, as he's always done his way, of saying there are other people here that are going to have a say in this matter, and I'm one of them.
Guys, we're down to our final few seconds, so I'll ask you a non-serious question to close. Are you watching the NBA Finals? And if so, who's going to win? John?
Golden State's absolutely going to win. They're too loaded.
How many games?
Six.
Okay.
Lawrence? I'm going for Steve Curry and Golden State, and I would say six games.
Okay. Lawrence Robinson, Executive Director of the Maricopa Community College District Center for Civic Participation, and John McDonald of the firm Policy AZ. Guys, thanks for joining us on the NewsCap.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.